I'm Dr. Christina Chen, a geriatrician at Mayo Clinic and host of Aging Forward, a podcast highlighting unique topics in geriatric medicine and the science of healthy aging, helping all of us live longer and fuller lives. Whether you're a caregiver for someone or learning how to care for your own health, we're here to help you feel informed, inspired, and empowered. Mayo Clinic's Aging Forward. New episodes every other week, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Future Projections. I am Carlos Collazo, joined by Ben Badler. What's up, Ben? How you doing?
I'm good. I feel like I got the first itch for wanting to see these WBC games coming up now for like the first time. It's hard for me to get too excited like years out for the event, but as it gets closer, I'm thinking back to the last WBC, Otani, Trout, like looking at that Dominican lineup. I mean, the insurance policy coverage stuff is not exactly getting me like juiced up. I don't get super excited about reading.
Yeah,
about
I was gonna have the opposite. I was gonna have the opposite reaction to you. I feel like all the coverage in the lead up to the World Baseball Classic has been more depressing than exciting. So the like itch for me to watch the World Baseball Classic hasn't been top of mind because mine has mostly been college baseball and like high school season focused. But I'm glad that one of us is a little more excited and optimistic and happier about it.
Well, you got to be locked into Team Brazil games in case Joseph Contreras gets on the mound.
Yeah, yeah.
He's gonna make a name for himself out there.
That would be cool. We just need to make sure that we're actually getting teams into the tournament. I don't know. It feels kind of insane.
I would love to see some sort of, in my own fantasy world, a prospect WBC game. Or mm-hmm. prospect WBC tournament, maybe like a 23U tournament where you could have the best 23U or the best prospect eligible players from the Dominican Republic and Venezuela and the United States going at it after each other, and an 18U tournament too, right? Like, I mean, I guess
kind of like the national teams.
Well, we kind of have that, but you don't really have that. I mean, you have it with the United States, you have it with Japan, Korea. Mm. Those teams bring their best for their, you know, the U18 World Cup, mm-hmm. but like the Dominican Republic, their best, like their U18 team, they do actually have some, they're starting to bring over more players who are unsigned or who are, amateur players are going to be the top players in their class. But those guys are like 15, 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the guys they fill in are just like players who are still, unsigned players who are 17, 18 years old. Whereas if we had a Dominican team with Joswar Gonzalez and Elian Pena, or a Venezuelan team with, Luis Hernandez and Francisco Renteria, Gabriel Davalillo behind the plate facing off against, whether it's, 28s for this year, right? Like Grady Emerson and Jacob mm-hmm. Lombard and Tyler Spang. Like, I don't know. That'll be an awesome tournament. That'd be fun. Yeah.
Would you cut it from 9 innings down to 7 and put it on the calendar in a terrible, terrible spot for it to actually be watched by people? That probably what would happen with a tournament like that.
Sounds
fun. Yeah, yeah, exactly. What is your excitement level for the WBC on like a 20 to 80 scale? My 20 to 80, my excitement is always the most for D1 opening day because that to me is when we are officially not in the off season of baseball because it just happens before major league stuff gets rolling. It happens before minor league. So like my excitement level for first pitch, Globe Life, or even actually like, I think I'm going to see Grady Emerson in a high school game prior to that. So that Grady Emerson game, I'm going to see, my excitement is an 80. And then everything else is downstream from that.
Yeah. The high school season, which is getting started now, the high school season, the college season, that's fun to get started because it gets us so much more information to analyze these players. Whereas the WBC for me is more of just sit on your couch, have a few beers,
purely enjoy
the game. I'm not analyzing the games and breaking them down and trying to project players off this. I want to watch Paul Skeens facing Junior Caminero. That's what I'm looking for.
That honestly, like watching major league games now after working for Baseball America for a decade is so different than it was prior to working for BA because of that element of it. Like it there are times where we're watching it for work, obviously, and you're always watching it with that lens of like, oh, what did I think of this player who's currently on the mound when he was an amateur? So like that's always going through your mind, but the major league game, it doesn't feel like work in the same way that for me, someone who's focused on the draft, like watching high school and college games, like I'm trying to be locked in. I'm not going there and sitting back and cracking open a beer or getting some popcorn and just hanging out. but it's a lot of fun. So I'm still plenty excited for it. Yeah. Any other WBS or WBC thoughts before we get into our main topics, Ben?
Yeah. Hopefully Team Puerto Rico can get their whole situation figured out. That'll be kind of a bummer if they weren't able to get a whole bunch of their best players in there for lousy reasons.
Yeah, one of the key nations in this tournament not being there would be a massive bummer, obviously. So that's kind of why my excitement is, I don't think, nearing your excitement level for the event. But before we want to talk farm system rankings today. We had new draft rankings drop as well. But before we get into those topics, just want to remind everyone to send us questions if you have them, if you want to hear us talk about certain prospects or ask us really anything about like how we're evaluating players, how we rank players, write about players. All that contact information is in the show notes. You can also rate and review the show wherever you're listening to your podcast. If you want to leave us a review in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, that would really help the show just get in front of more people's eyes. So if you haven't done that and you feel inclined, we really do appreciate it and would thank you for taking the time. But Ben, where do you want to head first? Draft or farm system rankings?
The farm system rankings that everyone agrees about.
Mm-hmm. I heard it was universally praised online on X.com. No one had any disagreements with this.
I think the general feedback was, and every year is my team is ranked too low. I think that's pretty. I do think, yeah. But we had the Pirates number one. I don't know. I didn't think they were like. They're a good farm system. I don't know. Like there are some years where it's clear there's one farm system that's going to be clearly our number one farm system. I didn't get the sense that it was, wow, like the Pirates are head and shoulders above everybody else. I got the sense that, we could have went in a few different directions with which team was going to be the number one farm system in baseball, depending on how you value the elite premium prospects,
right?
And in the Pirates case, that is what they have. I mean, all these teams that are in, like, certainly our top four, right? The Pirates 1, Cardinals 2, Brewers 3, Tigers 4, and then Rays were 5. But of those top five, the top four all have a top five overall prospect in baseball, right, Leading their system. But Connor Griffin is just a different animal.
Yeah, and I think I would probably agree with you in just how you're positioning the Pirates relative to the teams around them. For me, they were kind of the no-brainer team at one, and it's because of what you mentioned, like not just Connor Griffin. I think their top four prospect group is just the most impressive overall, and I think in general at BA, we lean towards impact talent carrying a lot more weight than just purely depth. Just because that impact talent is a lot harder to replace and to find in the first place. And I think impact talent changes the course of your major league team to a degree that just having a lot of quality depth really doesn't. And so for me, the Pirates were kind of the no-brainer one, even if I don't view it as like some massive chasm in talent. I actually felt myself really liking both the Cardinals and the Brewers at numbers 2 and 3. I think their collection of just high quality talent throughout the system, on top of having really impressive headliners and hitting headliners at premium positions as well. I feel like that's kind of the top tier for me, our top three teams. I would have Detroit in like a tier of their own at 4. And I really go back and forth on the Brewers versus the Cardinals on which I like better. I'm not sure if you lean in one direction or the other. It's also maybe worth noting that you wrote the Brewers. So you're probably the biggest expert we could have to talk about that organization in particular. But for me, it's like Pirates one, Cardinals, Brewers, flip a coin, and then Tigers would be fourth.
Yeah, I'm not quite there with you on the Pirates being this obvious number one, I guess. So I think they're top four. They have four top 40 prospects in baseball. They have Connor Griffin, who's number one. They have Bubba Chandler, who's 15 overall. They have Edward Florentino, who's 28. And then Seth Hernandez, who we're obviously very high on being number 38 overall. So
I'm excited to hear how you downplay these prospects in this argument, Ben, because you just listed a bunch of studs. Maybe it's because I mean, obviously love Connor Griffin. I also might be the highest in the office on Seth Hernandez, and I feel increasingly like I'm higher than everyone else on Bubba Chandler. So those three, it doesn't take a lot to convince me.
Well, I think the Pirates have an elite farm system, and I'm not arguing them being number
Ben
one.
Ben's saying they should be 10. Either.
Well, all right, so how good is the Pirates farm system outside of Connor Griffin? So my interpretation of what the Pirates have is a, you know, a good farm system. But if you replaced Connor Griffin with, let's give them a good prospect. So somebody else from the 24, like let's say they had drafted Braden Montgomery
right.
or Bryce Rainer, right? Say they had drafted one of those players in 2024 instead of Connor Griffin. They're good prospects. They're not Connor Griffin.
Right.
At that point, like where would you have the Pirates farm system if they had one of those guys instead of Connor Griffin?
They'd be top 10, I think, still for me.
Not like, top five, right?
No, but I think you could say the same thing for every one of these teams here if you take their top prospect away. They're like Connor Griffin being here is a significant reason why they're one.
So that's what I'm saying. I think he's carrying a lot of the value.
Agreed.
For that farm system. I think that the teams right behind them, the Cardinals, the Brewers, particularly the Brewers, have a more complete farm system. And I think you can make a case for the Brewers being number one. But also, Connor Griffin should be and is an extremely valuable player and should be valued extremely highly
right.
in farm system rankings. Because just look at historically the value of the number one overall prospect in baseball. You've got guys like Chipper Jones, A-Rod, Joe Mauer, Andrew Jones. That's four Hall of Famers, or I don't know if technically Hall of Famer, Hall of Fame elect. I don't know what the right term is for Andrew. But, I mean, Bryce Harper is on that track to join them. You've got guys like Mark Teixeira, you know, J.D. Drew, Josh Hamilton, Jason Hayward, Chris Bryant, Acuna, you know, Vladdy Jr., Seager, Gunnar Henderson. Like, yeah, and there's still players in there like an Andrew Benintendi or Byron Buxton's a good player. Obviously, a lot of injuries throughout his career, but just the historical outcomes of the number one prospect in baseball where – you know, you and I were not there when we were at, you know, when Baseball America was ranking Chipper Jones and and Joe Mauer and A-Rod. But like, you know, I was there when we were ranking Seager and Bryant and Harper and Acuna and those guys. It's just the talent is so obvious that these guys have. And that's the kind of company that Connor Griffin is in.
Yeah, you're not really pushing me off my position about the Pirates.
I'm not trying to change your position that Connor Griffin. My point, Connor Griffin is extremely valuable, and I think a ton of the value for the Pirates farm system being ranked where it is because of Connor Griffin and the value of Connor Griffin, or the value of just the number one prospect in baseball historically is so disproportionate to.
Right.
Even somebody who's 10 spots down the list from him. Like if he's going to be Bobby Witt Jr. 2.0, then when that alone, when we look back 20 years from now, is going to make the Pirates easily one of the most valuable farm systems
right.
in retrospect. Not that he's guaranteed to have that outcome. Right. But if you're the Rays, you know, you have the number five farm system in baseball. If you went to the Pirates and said, listen, we're going to give you literally all of our top 100 prospects. We'll give you Brody Hopkins. We'll give you Theo Gillen, Jacob Melton. You can have Carson Williams too. We'll trade them all just for Connor Griffin.
Yeah.
What do you think the Pirates are going to say?
No, they're not trading him.
Yeah, that's cute. No, thanks.
Right. Well, here's what I would say, though. Take out the number one prospects from all these teams, focusing in on the top three teams. So for the Brewers, take Jesus Madé out of consideration. For the Pirates, take Connor Griffin out of consideration. For the Cardinals, take J.J. Weatherholt out of consideration. I mean, clearly we like Connor Griffin the best of those three. He's the number one prospect in baseball. He's number one in our top 100. But still sticking towards impact players at the top of the list, who's number two through number four players do you prefer here? Because I still think, for me, this is why I like the Pirates more than you. I like their two through four prospects better than these others. So for the Pirates, those players are Bubba Chandler, Edward Florentino, Seth Hernandez. For the Brewers, those players are Luis Peña, Cooper Pratt, Jet Williams after the trade. And for the Cardinals, those players are Liam Doyle, Raniel Rodriguez, and Joshua Baez. Which trio are you taking there?
Yeah, I think the Pirates still have a pretty strong case there. I'm not
trying to push you into the no doubt Pirates. I mean, not no doubt as in clear chasm, but I guess for me, it would be like bending over backwards to try and put anyone who's not the Pirates in the number one spot, is kind of how I was going into it.
Like beyond the top four, who has the better system?
The better top 10. So if you're looking five through 10,
I would say top 30 too.
Just okay. So entire depth, like who has the deepest system?
Yeah, like let's say like 5 to 30. I would put the Brewers.
Let me see. I would probably put the Brewers and the Cardinals over the Pirates at that point.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, and also, yeah. If we're just looking at like 6 to 30, I would probably go Brewers, Cardinals, Pirates.
Is that your order? That's where I think and look, all these teams have a great prospect at the top too. Just not as good as Connor Griffin.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's where, like, if we're looking at the entire, we are looking at the entire farm system, but I think.
Right. And I would say, like, how we get to our farm system ratings, like, there are valuations that correspond with the BA grades on these players. So we get a total valuation for each team's farm system that gives us our starting point. We're not just like copying and pasting those numbers, but that kind of shows us directionally what area we need to be in. And then we'll tweak from there based on like our confidence, maybe volatility of farm systems, like proximity of prospects as a whole, hitting versus pitching, I'm sure for some people is a factor. So it is not just a straight up math equation, but we do try to have the BA grades and the values that are tied to those grades really drive how we're lining these teams up.
What are your thoughts on the Cardinals are the number two farm system in baseball. We debated them, especially between them and the Brewers after the Saintia/Ty Pete trade. I'm not like enamored with either of those guys. I mean, they're both good prospects, but both have their holes as well. Where are you on either the Cardinals versus Brewers or just the Cardinals system as a whole?
I probably, again, I go back and forth on Brewers versus Cardinals in general. Saintia is an arm that I'm excited about. I think he's like a fringe top 100 type, not a guy that I would be like massively confident putting in there now. But I think that the two-way factor with him, or the ambidextrous nature of what he does, I feel like overcomplicates how people view him as a prospect sometimes. I think just if you're looking at him as a straight up right-handed pitching prospect, it's really electric stuff. So I think he's a great add. I'm less enamored with Ty Pete at this point. I just think there are some real question marks on the offensive side of the game. But yeah, for if you were asking me to pick between the Cardinals and the Brewers, I feel like it's very difficult for me to have any conviction in that.
Yeah, I think the Cardinals have a very good farm system, especially when you have JJ Weatherholt at number one. Mm-hmm. I just think he's pretty strong case to be one of the favorites for NL Rookie of the Year this year. I just have very, very few question marks about him, especially offensively. Like, I don't know. Sometimes you still have very few questions about a player offensively, and then it still doesn't work out. But pretty much every box you're looking for a hitter to check, he checks. So
I wish that we were going to get a little bit better of a shot at him playing shortstop full time, because I
think Mason Lynn's going to let him do that.
I don't think so either, and I understand it because of that, but I do just think JJ Weatherholt has proven to be a pretty solid shortstop defender, and it would be, in an ideal world, nice for him to be moving up to a team that had a clear hole and need at shortstop, so we could just see. I mean, maybe ultimately, even if he got that opportunity, it would become apparent that he needs to slide to second base, and like we always say, like a billion times in this podcast, like having a lot of shortstops is never a real issue. These guys can always go play other positions, but
you know, regret taking JJ Weatherholt.
No, we did have a question in our draft chat about this. Someone, I presume they're a White Sox fan, but they said, "What are the White Sox going to do with Billy Carlson if they take Rock Chulowski?" I was like, "What do you mean? Nothing. The exact same thing they would have done otherwise." So we still get those. Still people freaking out about having too many shortstops.
Yeah, some good development stories too in the Cardinals system this year. Obviously, Joshua Baez being, probably the biggest development story of anybody in minor league baseball
last year,
going from outside the top 30, kind of trending toward bust type status, and now he just had an unbelievable transformation in terms of the swing and the contact that he made, and obviously the performance up to the upper levels, jumping into our top 100. Raniel Rodriguez, more of just like continuing to do what he did the year before, but even more, and now doing it at the full season level, is just, you know, TBD about the defense, but man, the bat looks really, really exciting. Combination of hitting ability, power from a guy who I think should be able to stay behind the plate with some more work. So, you know, you have those guys. You add Liam Doyle to the mix at the top of your draft. Quinn Matthews was the one where obviously it went backwards for him last year. But overall, and then you look just throughout the depth of this system too, like even beyond just like their top 10 guys, where you have guys like Ryan Mitchell out of the draft this year, or excuse me, last year, you're signing Emmanuel Luna, big power speed combination guy from international free agency this year. So there's like their top 15, 16, like top 20 guys is pretty strong overall.
It is, and I feel like there's a really good balance of up the middle hitting prospects, a lot of catchers here, a lot of shortstops further down, and then pitching too. It's not an organization that feels very heavily slanted on the hitting side or the pitching side. I feel like sometimes you get that, and I don't know that that's a huge concern. You can still trade from areas of strength to address needs, but I just do think it is nice when you have a balanced system. There's a good combination of near proximity big leaguers, guys you'd expect to move quickly, younger players who are athletic and have solid like plate skills that you can build on. I just think there's a lot to like here. It's also the highest the Cardinals have ranked with their farm system in a number of years, from 2021 to 2025. The highest they've ranked is ninth overall in 2023. They got that farm system ranking. Beyond that, it's been 12th or worse. They've never been in that span, they've never been like a bottom third farm system. They've kind of always been solidly middle of the pack. So for Cardinals fans, I'm not sure if you hope at this point it trends back towards that range, because that means you're not competitive at the big league level and you're not amassing prospects anymore. But maybe just worth noting that this is not an organization that we've had this high in a while.
Well, that is the big difference, right, among these top four teams, right?
Yep.
The success or lack thereof in recent years from the Pirates and Cardinals relative to the Brewers and Tigers, who have two of the top five farm systems, but have also had success.
Yeah, maybe in the big leagues. I feel like that stands out the most for the Pirates, because they've just not been a good major league team for a while now. But they also have not had a, I guess in 2023, they were 10th overall. But in 2025, 16th, 2024, 13th, 23 again, 10th overall, 2022, 11th, 2021, 21st. If you're a Pirates fan, are you a little annoyed that it's maybe taken this long to get the farm system to this level, or no? Because just looking at those ranks, it's not where you would like to be if you are a small market team that's not going to spend money. You kind of have to have a great farm system for that to work.
I think that's probably down ballot of the greatest frustrations among Pirates fans right now. I'll
just add to yeah. it, yeah.
Yeah. Understandably so. But the Brewers at number three, I think they have a good case to be the number one farm system in baseball. They have an elite prospect at the top in Jesus Madé, who's number four overall. They have three in the top 50, Luis Peña, Cooper Pratt, couple shortstop / TBD in Luis Peña's case. But then you got, especially after the trade they just made for Freddie with Freddie Peralta, they now have six top 100 prospects. Yeah. So you got Jet Williams, Brandon Sproat, add Logan Henderson into that mix. Mm-hmm. And you have a deep top 10. Like all the players who are in the Brewers top 10 are players who are in play to be top 100 prospects this year. Maybe Jefferson Carroll, a little bit different case. He's like a near top 100 guy now who has been in the top 100. I imagine he graduates to the big leagues at some point. This year is just more uncertainty surrounding his throwing ability, given the due to his shoulder surgery. Mm-hmm. And it's a deep top 30 overall. Yeah. I just think it's one of the deeper top 30s. There's just a lot of different breakout candidates, especially at the lower levels, but they're just talent throughout all levels of their farm system. There's not like one area where I look at and think, oh, this is a glaring weakness of this farm system, where you look at some other farm systems and you're like, oh, it's very top heavy, or this system is lacking pitching, or this team has a whole bunch of guys at the lower levels, but there's not much help really coming in 2026. And the Brewers are just a very balanced and complete farm system.
I feel like they also have a lot of hitters, and even moving beyond the top five, top 10 hitters in the system, like a majority of their hitters feel like they bring really strong contact skills and plate discipline to the table. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would put the Brewers at the top of the spectrum in terms of like teams who target contact and zone control. There are a number of teams who obviously are prioritizing those skills, but in terms of like the actual production and performance of these young players in the minor leagues, that's a standout trait for me from this system. So just, I feel like it's typical in most systems as you get into the 15 plus range, where there's just a lot of uncertainty, a lot of questions, a lot of crudeness to some of the offensive games of the prospects that you're looking at in that range. And just like reading reports on the players in that range for the Brewers, I just kind of always find myself liking what those hitters do at the plate. So whether it's just a testament to the Brewers selecting for those players in the first place, or just doing a nice job coaching them, or some combination of both, I mean, it's no surprise that we have confidence in what the Brewers do really at every level of the organization. They were our organization of the year, team of the year for a reason. So yeah, that maybe is like just a trait or a consistent theme of this system that stands out to me in a positive way.
Yeah. How about the Tigers at number four? This is a farm system I think is very heavily reliant on the top three in particular in that system.
I agree. And that is the exact reason why I had them kind of in a tier of their own after these first three. I feel like just for the Pirates, more just like the concentration of talent at the top with four players that I think are just elite. And then with the Cardinals and Brewers, headliners at the top, you're really excited about, on top of depth throughout the 30. For me with the Tigers, it's really a lot of weight has been carried by obviously Kevin McGonigal, who fits in the exact same combo we just had with Connor Griffin, with JJ Weatherholt, with Jesus Madé. He is an equivalent talent to those sorts of players, maybe the best pure hitting prospect that I can remember covering for like their entire prospect cycle, if that makes sense. I don't think I was here for like the start of when Vladdy Jr. was doing his thing. So Kevin McGonigal has just been, I mean, maybe he gets to the major leagues and just doesn't live up to those expectations, because again, that happens, but I would be very surprised if that were the case. But the fact that the Tigers have both Kevin McGonigal and Max Clark, two of the most impressive pure hitting prospects in the organization, carries a lot for me here. And I like Bryce Rainer, and I think he would be a top 100 prospect for me, even if I'm maybe not quite as bullish on his pure hitting ability right now. But after that, I feel like there are a lot more questions in this organization compared to the Brewers, compared to the Cardinals. But I'm also fine with being aggressive on putting them here, because McGonigal and Clark just carry so much weight and carry so much value.
Yeah, you have three top 30 prospects, including number two, McGonigal, number six, Max Clark. So when you have the number two and the number six prospect in your farm system, just the value of those two players is,
and the fact that it's just two hitters too. Yeah. Just the bust rate for those players, you feel a lot less worried. If it was two pitchers, I don't know if I would feel quite as confident in the way I'm talking about these guys as I am.
Well, I probably wouldn't have a pitcher. Well, there wouldn't be too many pitchers that would have number two overall.
No.
But yeah, those guys. But I think once you get outside, and look, like Josue Briseño is a good prospect to have. I think there's a significant gap probably between three and four, and then especially
when you see
four and beyond. And I like some of the other players
right
in their system, but when you just compare outside, you know, let's say like their number four through 30 prospects to not just the systems that we've just talked about that are ahead of them, but the systems that are behind them,
right?
I don't think it's as talented as some, like, even like the Rays, who just don't have those top end guys that the Tigers do. But the Tigers do have those guys, and that's what puts them ahead. Like, those guys have the chance to be really, especially Clark and McGonigal in particular, really, really special players.
There may be, I don't know exactly how many organizations this would be the case for, but seeing recent draftees like Jordan Yost and Michael Oliveto, both inside the top 10 here, I think the fact that they're both auto in the top 10 maybe tells you about the lack of depth that we have here, because I think those are fine prospects, but I do think both of them have pretty real questions that I would want to have answered before they were in a top 10 of like a really deep system. I don't think they would crack the top 10 of a number of these organizations we're talking about. And there are even some organizations outside of our top five that are just very deep and maybe don't have the same headliner talent that I don't think Yost or Oliveto would crack their top 10. So I do think it's a pretty significant fall off beyond then. With, again, it's not like there's no talent here. There are a lot of players that I like certain things about what they do. I just feel like I need to see more of it to be super confident or convicted.
You'd like them all to be like five spots lower on their list, right? Like,
I think
like Chris Rodriguez too, in their top 10. Chris Rodriguez is a very good prospect. He guy has super bat speed, great athlete, physicality, can crush a fastball. He's number eight in your farm system. He's in the DS, or just coming out of the DSL. He's very much a free swinger, and a ton of questions about whether he's going to hit a breaking ball. If he does, I mean, obvious upside there. But that guy in, you know, whether it's the Brewers farm system or the Rays farm system, or, you know, a couple of farm systems that are, you know, maybe just below them, a guy who probably should be, you know, five plus spots lower down.
Yeah. And another guy, not to like bang on all their draft guys, but just I think the placement of where they're at initially after being drafted just stands out to me. But Malachi Witherspoon at 12 overall, tremendous arm talent. Like he throws incredibly hard. He's a great athlete on the mound. He can really spin the baseball. But this is also a player who in his college career, he had a ERA north of five. I have real concerns about just the control and the command of the strike throwing. Like, what's that going to be? Like, a player with this sort of, in my mind, reliever risk, who also is just very unproven in pro ball. He hasn't made an official debut being 12. I think just kind of speaks to maybe a little bit less depth.
Yeah. But all that said, like, Kevin McGonigal and Max Clark could basically still be the Tigers' version of like right. Vlad and Bo. Right?
Exactly.
I mean, obviously, neither of them is Vladdy Jr., like totally different types of
just in terms of impact they could have on the organization. Yeah.
But yeah, it could be like those two guys, like Vlad and Bo came up together through every step of the way, basically. Other than,
right. If you got nothing from anyone from 3 to 30, but Kevin McGonigal and Max Clark become the major leaguers we think they can be, you'd be thrilled.
I'm sure if we looked back at, I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but we're, I don't know exactly where we had the Blue Jays farm system ranked when Vlad and Bo were in Double A, and they had, you know, they had Lourdes Gurriel too on that team. They had some other, you know, solid players, but even if nobody else in that farm system did anything,
right,
I'm sure just the value that was in the Blue Jays farm system at that time, just from Vlad and Bo, would put them right. top five. But obviously no guarantee for either of them to have this outcome. But I do think that's a scenario that could be pretty special and pretty fun for the Tigers.
I feel like
over the next half decade.
I feel like kind of a theme of this podcast as we're talking about farm systems is like depth is really nice to have, but everyone would trade a deep farm system for a few truly impactful talents at the top. Like if you had to pick one, obviously, but best of both worlds, which the Brewers and the Cardinals do have, but just the majority of your value coming from top end talents is just how it works.
Well, I also think there's a difference. Like when we're talking about a top, one, a number one prospect in baseball.
Right.
And a top, you know, 5 to 10 prospect versus a top 30, top 50, or even mm-hmm. like a top 100 prospect. That's where I think, yeah, there is more value in depth. Like, you know, the number 82 prospect in baseball is great to have. But that's where you could get into more conversations of, okay, would you trade more of like a not that you see that many prospect for prospect trades anyway.
I wish we did. It would be great from an evaluation standpoint.
Yeah, like we saw what Luis Bennett, the Nationals traded Bennett for Luis Perales from the mm-hmm. Red Sox. Kind of yep. an unusual situation. That was fun, obviously, because of the Paul Toboni coming from the Red Sox. So
right.
But that's where I think, it, like, if you're trading for the number 80 prospect, that's where, yeah, there were some teams that would say, okay, well, we'll take your number 9 and your number 13 and your number 19 prospect. Or you know, I'm making up numbers, obviously. But that's where I think you get into some more depth trades, whereas the premium elite guys is like, yeah, we're not trading a bunch of your, even, like, your best prospects for mm-hmm. Connor Griffin or for Kevin McGonigal. Like, it's like, you know, somebody in your fantasy league trying to trade you a bunch of guys they don't really want, or when you come up with these you know, when you see these fake trade proposals ideas, and it's like from somebody, it's like, well, what if we gave these guys that are on the fringes of our rosters or the prospects that aren't really trending the right way that we don't really mm-hmm. like anymore for Tarek Skubal or
yeah right you yeah. trade 10 dimes for a dollar. Yeah, no one's doing that.
Yeah, but
I think it would be fun to see, like, imagine JJ Weatherholt or Jesus Madé were just traded for each other one-to-one. Like, I know Jesus Madé is going to be in the major leagues quickly, but it would be super entertaining to see a trade like that where you had comparable talents and maybe timelines for organizations that were just not aligned, and the teams were like, hey, let's flip these guys. Again, I think if Jesus Madé is just super young and getting into the major leagues, I'm not trying to say he needs 3 more years before he's ready. But that sort of a trade, I would love to just see those happen. But it's so rare. I feel like once you're talking about swapping elite talents like that in the same range, teams probably always feel like they just have more information about their guy and value their guy more and just wouldn't take the risk of flipping them.
There's also just a natural bias toward wanting or liking the guy that, you know, you guys that you drafted or that you signed yeah. as an international free agent mm-hmm. more. And I think that's true, but also on the depth stuff too, there's also just a natural bias, including like us with what we do. at Baseball America to overrate the depth of the
teams
farm
you're familiar
system
with
that you yeah. know the best.
Right.
Because right. you're going, you know, teams do it, fans do it, we do it at Baseball America. If you follow the Boston Red Sox farm system, or you work for the Red Sox or whatever, if that's the system you know best, you're going to know way much. You're going to know way more about the number right. 18 and the number 28 or theoretical number 38 prospect right. in the Red Sox farm system compared to the same players in the Diamondbacks or the Pirates or the Brewers organization. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, well, we have this guy who, you know, is our number 27 prospect and he throws 100 miles an hour. Well,
yeah, I think
everybody
you...
has like a couple or a few of those guys. Well, this guy also can't throw strikes and he's a reliever. And
the most common thing I hear from is like, yeah, like maybe fans of teams who are familiar with some younger players who do a few things really well. And they're like, oh, within our farm system, this player, his exit velocity is right in this area. He's like really exciting. I'm like, well, literally every team has a player in that range who does something similar. Like there are always players who have traits you like or have specific tools. And I do think it is important if you're going to like confidently try and compare those players across to other teams or just in the greater prospect landscape, like you just have to familiarize yourself with other organizations. Just because I'm only writing the Braves and the Guardians for a handbook doesn't mean I don't need to be aware of players at the bottom of other farm systems. And that's why just like editing the prospect handbook to clean up writing and take care of punctuation and typos, like we have to do that because it's useful. And we want the book to be clean, but just the additional context you're getting about your own systems from doing that. Like after I write the Braves system and then read your Brewers system, it tells me something about the depth or lack thereof of the Braves system, because I'm coming away with two very different feelings about the players in that 20 to 30 range with Atlanta's, where you're really like struggling. I think every player who are writing up in this range has things to like, but there are just a lot more flaws with those players. And those become more apparent when you're looking at a system that's at the opposite end of the spectrum that doesn't have the lack of depth in the same way. So it's just useful to try and drill as deep as you can for all these teams for that reason.
But even doing that, I think the bias for us just individually, I mean, still exists. But that's the part
sure,
of the,
sure.
that's part of the good thing.
Yeah, I guess I'm more speaking to like
people.
Yeah, I'm speaking more to like trying to mitigate that bias as much as you can. Yeah, you're
yeah.
right.
Yeah, I think the teams themselves, kind of going back to your hypothetical trade situation, do that too, because we'll get feedback from teams too, like, oh, how come we weren't ranked higher? How come you guys have us ranked here when we have this, and that? And it's kind of the same thing. Sometimes it's like, well. Yeah, these teams that are ahead of you have that, but they have the same guys, but they're even further down.
They're just named, they're different names.
Their list. And sometimes it's, yeah, like sometimes I might agree with a team, or sometimes it might be, okay, yeah, you guys are ranked 16th, but like from, I don't know, I'm not looking at the rankings right now, but yeah, some teams that are 3-4 spots within you, there's not like some clear line of demarcation between them. It's arguable one way or the other.
I think the range for our farm system rankings that is always the most difficult to separate in my mind is basically 15 to like 23, early 20s. Like that cluster of like meh farm systems are so tricky to separate. And I feel like anyone who's like adamant about the specific order of teams in that range, you're probably just like overly confident. There's a lot of false precision in the separation of teams in that range because it is so close. And I really do feel like one player can often make the difference in those situations. It is tough in that range. I feel like at the very top, there are teams that separate themselves. At the very bottom, there are some teams that are pretty easy to separate. And you just kind of look and say, oh, there's no depth here or impact top end talent we feel confident about. So like, it's easy to work from the back from like 30 to 25 in some ways at a certain point for this exercise.
Which teams do you feel like have a chance to take a big jump forward with their farm system yeah. next year. I feel like the
way I had one.
Well, the way to cheat, obviously, would be, okay, the White Sox, they're going to be able to draft whoever they want, number one overall. I have a sneaking suspicion it may end up being Rock Chalowski. And they're going to have the biggest bonus pool. And they're still rebuilding. They could trade away players for more prospects. So, like, them, the Nationals, I think, are going to be in that same kind of situation, not with the draft pick, but they're going to maybe trade away C.J. Abrams, Jacob Young. Like, they're going to be trading for more prospects. They're clearly moving in that direction. I would be stunned if the Nationals do not have a top 10 farm system next year, with all respect to, like, everybody there, not because of some masterful stroke of scouting and player development necessarily, just because they're going to be trading for more prospects. Like, right. They're going to be trying to acquire prospects. They're not going to be trading away Harlan Susana and, you know, Travis Sequeira to try to get, you know, another piece for the big league team. I think those two teams are pretty obviously candidates.
Who was the second? Oh, White Sox and Nationals.
Yep. Yeah, White Sox and Nationals. But, like, who else do you feel like has the internal prospects that could really take a jump forward for the organization or for their organization next year?
Yeah, the first team that I thought of for this is the Marlins. I think the Marlins are a good candidate to step forward, in part for the same reason that I'm a little hesitant of putting them towards the elite. I think the Marlins have a great collection of upside and tools and athletes at the lower levels. I think there are a lot of prospects who have flashed some things or have elite defensive ability or have great raw power, or they've got a ton of pitchers who are young and just have crazy arm talent, but I'm concerned about the strikes. And so I feel like this Marlins system has a lot of volatility. And I feel like if things head positively for even just a handful of these players in the right direction, a year from now, if that volatility has just gone and they've proven themselves at the lower levels, I just feel like I could think about this organization in a much different way, in a positive direction. I think for the same reason, it could swing the other way if just there's a lot of bad development years from a number of these players. But there's just a lot of talent here and less certainty.
So who is it heavily based on their draft from last year with Ivar Ked and Cam Cannarella?
And then some of the pitchers they have, Kevin DeFrank, they're players throughout this system here. Scrolling through some more of them at the bottom. Even like recent guys like PJ Morlando. I don't know what you think about Noble Meyer at this stage. Like, clearly his prospect status has faded, but if he rebounds, I just felt like as I was going through this system, it was a lot of players at the lower levels who have really loud tools, but just some flaws to their games they need to either iron out or just get more playing time and more reps. Starlin Cava is a guy whose prospect stock has dimmed a little bit. Still a phenomenal defender. If he can show a little bit more at the bat, we could be looking at him in a different lens. Even at the very top, I mean, I'm not sure what your expectations are for, like, when Thomas White is going to be pitching, if he's going to graduate, like, how much of this top five you expect to not be there. It's Thomas White, Robbie Snelling, Ivar Ket, Owen Casey, Joe Mack. A handful of those guys are definitely not going to be prospect eligible a year from now. But I feel like beyond that, there's just a lot of outfielders, too, that have tools. So that just felt like a younger team compared to some of the other orgs, and maybe that could go in a good direction for them.
The team for me would be the Dodgers, because when you look at their top 10, I don't know how many, I think it's a good top 10, not a great, like not like an elite top 10, but it's good. And I don't know how many of those guys are going to graduate. Actually, I mean, Eduardo Quintero is not going to graduate. Josue DePaula, Mike Sirota, Zaire Hope. I don't expect any of those guys. I mean, maybe Sirota stays healthy and goes bonkers and gets the big leagues, but
He hasn't played at super high levels so far. So
yeah, but he is, like, he's older than those guys. He missed time at the end of the end of the season last year because he got hurt. So that slowed down his path a little bit, but I could see him moving quickly. Dodgers don't have any need to move him quickly, so they can let him marinate a little bit longer. Charles Davalon, they just drafted. Emil Morales, I think, has a chance to jump into our top 100 prospects at some point pretty soon. So like you just look up and down that top 10. I mean, Alex Freeland is the one guy, whether he graduates, whether he gets traded, I'm not sure he has a clear future. Yep. With the Dodgers, maybe you could say the same thing about even all of their elite prospects that they have too. So I guess that actually be the one thing where it could swing the other way, where yeah, like Quintero and DePaula and Hope and Sirota, maybe they all take big steps forward, and right. maybe three of them are in a different organization.
Well, even the 20s, like I'm looking at guys down the back of their list, like Cam Leiter, James Tibbs, Landon Vitterick, either players with premium talent coming out of the draft, or big time tools in the case of Vitterick. Like the Dodgers have had a lot of success with profiles like this. So if those guys take strides forward, and I just think probably, even if there are no real improvements from any of these prospects, I think the Dodgers system, Josh wrote a story about like why this is the first time the Dodgers are not a top 10 farm system. It's the first time since 2014 that's the case for us. I think you can make a case right now that they should be a top 10 farm system. I like the group of outfielders, the four outfielders at the top, quite a bit. I like the fact that it's very hitter heavy. I know one of the critiques of the system is like, oh, the pitching depth is thinner than it has been. Okay, still got a lot of really good hitting prospects that I like. So I know people are probably thrilled to see the Dodgers outside of the top 10 on our farm system rankings because they just always live there. But I legitimately think they have a case for it right now to be there.
Yeah, the trade caveat stuff aside, I do expect in a world where, let's say, trades were banned, the Dodgers would...
What a horrible, horrible world.
Yeah. But no, I think there's a lot of upside potential for a lot of these guys to continue to take mm-hmm. steps forward
yeah, next year. Yeah, that's a good one. Any other teams you want to hit on? You want to talk some draft?
I wanted to talk about the new top 200 draft rankings that came out.
You top 200 board dropped the Canon preseason draft ranking for the 2026 class.
Yeah, you moved Rock Chulowski down to 7. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. You know, earlier in the year, it wasn't on this update, but one of the updates, I think it must have been our October update. Peter and Jacob were at the field in Jupiter, and we were close to finalizing our list. And I messaged in our Slack. I was like, yeah, looks like we're going to be flipping Rock Chulowski a little bit down the board. He's been getting some bad feedback. And apparently Peter was like wide-eyed looking at Jacob like, what? Is this serious? And I was like, no, I'm just kidding. So Rock Chulowski is still number one. We got some movement at the top. That's interesting. There are a few arms moving up in our top 10. We've got three college pitchers at the top. We kind of shuffled the order of the college arms. It's now Cameron Flukey at Coastal Carolina has the SP1 designation at number 3, Jackson Flora, UC Santa Barbara at number 4. Those were two notable up arrow players. And Ben, this is one of the more exciting draft classes I've ever covered. So I just can't wait for the season to get rolling.
The college pitcher stuff is, I'm sure we're going to be talking about it, if not every week, like every other week mm-hmm. on this podcast. And I'm sure you will on the draft podcast as well. And just throughout our coverage at BA, but just this, like who ends up being the number one or just how we end up ranking mm-hmm. the college pitchers at the end of the day, come July 11th or whatever it is going into the draft is going to be interesting. Cause we jumped up Cameron Flukey into that number one spot. We jumped up Jackson Flora right behind him at number 2. I don't know. I guess maybe are you biased against the SEC, Carlos?
Yeah, I have a notable SEC biased. Liam Peterson got banged 5 spots from 4 to 9. No, I mean, we're not trying to create a ton of separation here with these pitchers. I think having all of them in the top 10 and really the way I'd view the tiers, we had a question about like the tiering of the talent in this year's draft list. And in my mind, the tiers are Rock Chulowski kind of in a tier of his own at 1. And then I think Grady Emerson is kind of in a second tier on his own as well. It's hard to think of anyone who could push him for the number 2 spot right now. After those two, I really feel like from 3 with Cameron Flukey all the way down to, I don't know. Maybe the college shortstops, Chris Hakopian, Eric Becker, Tyler Bell, 12 to 14. Like, I feel like that is your next range of players that you could probably jumble up in any particular order. Maybe if you wanted to dial it back a little bit more than that, you could say from 3 to number 10 with Tyler Spangler rounding out that tier. You could jumble those players in any order. But if you wanted to tell me that, and I said this on the draft podcast, so I'll give you a chance to correct me if I was wrong, but I was saying how, like, all of us at BA have our preferences for which of these pitchers we would take today. I think mine would be Cameron Flukie, who I think is the most polished and the safest and the most well-rounded now. Jacob would take Jackson Flora at UC Santa Barbara. He's just enamored with the fastball slider combination, rightfully so, and just very bullish on the changes that he might show this year with the changeup and curveball. And then I think in the past you've said that you prefer Liam Peterson, the big workhorse starter from from Florida. And I don't think any of those are wrong right now. I am hopeful to not indicate that, like, there is this massive gulf in talent. And it's kind of fun to have this trio starting the year so we can follow this little horse race for SP1.
But you did, I mean, you did jump Flora and Flukie up, I'd say pretty considerably from where they were. I mean, like, they were both.
Yeah, Flukie was 10, he jumps to 3. Flora was 17 and jumps to 4. Yep.
So what was it for you that jumped those two guys into potential top 5 overall pick type status?
Yeah, I think the more we've dug into those profiles in particular, the more we've really liked them. I think like viewing Flukie and Flores having two of the better fastballs in the country, and then just seeing some of the strike ability, the command ability with Flukie, and also just hearing from the industry. Like, people love Cameron Flukie. They're really high on Jackson Flora. I think for Flora in particular, having him at 17 was a lot lower than we'd want to have him. And we've basically heard throughout the industry that, like, Flukie, Flora, Peterson all should be in the mix, kind of in the same range. And we just get fewer question marks and fewer negative feedbacks from Flukie in particular. That's kind of the rationale for why he's in the number one spot right now. I think a lot of it is the command piece. I think maybe a secondary part of that is, like, the secondary pieces of his arsenal. Like, he's just shown a greater arsenal depth to this point than Flora and Liam Peterson. I think Flora's big question marks are he's primarily been a two-pitch pitcher to this point. We need to see a little bit more from the changeup and the curveball this spring. And then with Liam Peterson, the one thing I kind of kept coming back to is I think just the quality of the command there from him is a little bit shorter than what people want to see. So that's kind of the rationale. Again, like, I don't want to say that this is like a Paul Skeens scenario where Cameron Flukie is clearly the top, but every bit of feedback that we've gotten over the offseason has indicated that kind of this should be the order for now, and keep an open mind.
Yeah, if Flukie seems like somebody who could be a pretty fast mover potentially.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, in our best tools balloting for preseason All-America, we have scouts grayed out a whole host of different tools. One of them is, like, closest to the majors. I believe Flukie was second after Rochelowski. I'm pulling that up right now so I can actually tell you with confidence, but I do think Flukie at this point would be the player that I would expect to be on that, like, fastest moving trajectory. So yeah, pulling up our best tools, we had Rochelowski overwhelmingly won that category, closest to the majors. Then it was the next three the guys we're talking about: Cameron Flukie, Liam Peterson, Jackson Flora. I'm really interested in like where these college pitchers go compared to the college hitters. Like, for me personally, I would be, if this list was a, like, Carlos Collazo's draft board, Justin LeBron would be over all these pitchers. He's 5 right now in between Flukie and Flora, or I should say behind those two and ahead of Liam Peterson. But I really feel like you've got a collection of college hitters who are premium profile types of Justin LeBron, Drew Burris at Georgia Tech, Derek Curiel at LSU. I feel like if you're picking up
Tyler
the top
Bell of, too, or
I think Tyler Bell and Eric Becker for me are a little bit further back, just because I don't know. I mean, Curiel definitely does have more power than Tyler Bell and Eric Becker, but I'm just more confident in the first three I mentioned. But if they jumped into that range, it wouldn't shock me. But I think there are a lot of premium college bats. And if I'm picking up top, I would much rather get a bat if I can, if the talents are equal. So I'll be really curious to see how those college hitters and these college pitchers.
So then what are you hearing on Justin LeBron that has him, I guess, all the way down at number five?
Yeah, and he actually moved up in this ranking. So he was six last time. He was five this time. I think that Justin LeBron, among this top tier of player, is probably the most polarizing player. I've heard from people who think he's legitimate number two in the class. And then we've also heard from people who think he's like way further back in the first round. I think
like in Justin, the 20s.
Yeah. Which okay. It feels shocking to me, but yeah, some people think that. And it seems to come down to purely like hit tool questions, approach questions. His conference performance last spring was not that great. I think versus spin in particular, he's going to need to show a lot of improvement, whether that's pitch recognition, aggression and approach, or just pure contact skills. But Justin LeBron is just a tremendous athlete with great bat speed, great defensive ability at shortstop, a plus arm. He's a plus runner. I think if everything clicks for Justin LeBron, he could be challenging Rock Chulowski 1-1 this year. And I mean, he just has like it's not all that dissimilar from what Jacob Lombard is on the high school side, I don't think. Like, these are two guys who you feel very confident they're going to be shortstops and play that position at a high level. Great athletes, can really run. They have power. And the difference in opinion is purely going to come down to what's your confidence in their hitting ability? What's your confidence in them making more contact at the next level? And if you're on more of the positive side for those guys, very easy case to say they shouldn't get outside of the top five. If you're more towards the negative side and you're like, hey, I don't want to take one of these guys who's just going to struggle to make contact. I don't want an Elijah Green situation. I don't think either of these guys have the swing and miss questions that Elijah Green had, but that is the fear for the people who are less excited about those profiles.
Yeah, he hit 316, 421, 636 with 18 home runs last year as a sophomore at Alabama. But it sounds like I remember too, the first, four weeks
is going on the season. Nuclear.
Yeah, you're watching highlights and you're like, oh my God, like, could we get this guy in the draft this year at like top five, maybe number one overall? And then he got into SEC play. And that's when it seems like some more holes popped up. Ended up with a 24% strikeout rate overall.
Right. So if you look at his overall line in 2025, just looking at last spring, his overall line is 316, 421, 636, OPS north of 1,000. The strikeout rate was 24.2%. If you just look at conference competition for Justin LeBron, his line is 252, 341, 479. The OPS drops 200 points to 820, and the strikeout rate jumps to 31.9%. Mm-hmm. Like, that is an alarming strikeout rate. That's like a Miles Bailey sort of strikeout rate if you just copied it and pasted it for the full season. So I think he just has to perform against the SEC this year. Maybe no other player's conference performance this spring will be as important as Justin LeBron's this spring.
Yeah. I'm trying to look at some of these other guys. Do you think any of these other college shortstops who are not too far off, like Chris Hacopian at Texas A&M, Bell at Kentucky, Tyler Bell, Eric Becker at Virginia, maybe Chris Rembert too, middle infielder at Auburn. Do those guys have a chance to jump into that top five mix?
I think so.
Or are they more just like solid, middle back first round types?
Yeah, I think they could all jump into that range, really. I mean, both the Chris's, Chris Hacopian at Texas A&M and Chris Rembert at Auburn, they're maybe the least athletic, least likely to stick at shortstop of the names you mentioned. But also, if one or both of them wound up being like the best pure hitters in this college class, that wouldn't shock me. Chris Hacopian has earned some like Matt Shaw sort of comps. But his contact skills, his power is impressive. He'll have a chance to prove he can be a better defender at shortstop. If he goes off, it wouldn't shock me at all if he jumps into that range. I think Eric Becker and Tyler Bell are both players that I'm at least more confident that can play shortstop at a pretty high level. Tyler Bell has this intriguing tool set. I know you're a big Tyler Bell fan. He's switch hitter. He's got some power. I think if he can clean up the contact a little bit this spring, he could get into that range. Eric Becker, I think the contact skills are a little bit more present with him. The question with Becker for me would be like, what's the impact we're looking at? So yeah, I think all these guys really have a chance to jump into that range. Even if you want to fold in guys like AJ Gracia, Sawyer Strawsnyder, if those two have strong seasons, they have the tools and the physicality and the impact to warrant going in this range. I think at this point, after covering the draft for so long, I really try to avoid locking myself out of thinking players can move, because we just see so much movement on the board every year, depending on how players play. Some people are going to do really well, and some of these guys we're talking about are going to struggle, and they're going to fall down the board, and they're going to be opportunities for players to take those spots. So I just think there's a really solid collection of hitters to start with.
Yeah.
Even guys like Von Lackey and Ryder Helfrich in our 20s, like college catchers, if those guys prove they're going to be catchers at the next level, they could easily get into the top 10 too. I mean, Lackey has tremendous defensive ability to go with great contact skills. Helfrich has really rare impact potential for a player who could stick at catcher. I think teams would love to see those guys perform. And that is a demographic that teams, there are only so many catchers you're going to find. And if you feel confident that they're both going to play the position and hit a lot, they could easily be top 10 to me.
Yeah, I'm a longtime Ryder Helfrich fan. I would that would not surprise me either to see him going first round. What about outside the top 30 or so players? Who are some of the buzzier names, maybe in that 30 to let's say top 100 type range right now? I mean, it looks like we moved Sean Duncan up, left-handed pitcher from Canada with a smooth, easy delivery. I know the teams that are that love left-handed pitchers are going to really like Sean Duncan. Just does it so easy. Really good touch and feel for what he's doing on the mound. Anybody else who's jumping out and getting a lot of buzz right now?
Yeah, Duncan is part of this, like, really this buffet of left-handed pitchers on the high school side that's really impressive. There's a lot of depth at that demographic. I think maybe the three most notable up arrow names in this range would be college hitters with just very well-rounded offensive profiles. That's Aiden Robbins at Texas, who goes from 87 to 35. That's Logan Hughes, an outfielder at Texas Tech, who goes from off the top 100 to 53. And then Brady Ballinger, first baseman at Kansas, who goes from off the 100 to 59. I think Ballinger would be a player who, if you liked Andrew Fisher a year ago out of Tennessee, Ballinger shares a lot of those offensive traits from like an under the hood batted ball standpoint. He does a lot of things really well. He's patient. He makes a lot of contact, hits the ball hard, gets the ball in the air to the pull side at a solid clip. So all those guys feel like they're definite top two round types now. And all those guys, again, if they push themselves into the first round, wouldn't be surprising to me. Those are probably the three most notable in that range.
All right. What about, we expanded it to 200 in this update. Who, I guess, of the guys who are now in that 101 to 200 range, who we added to the list, especially maybe on the high school side. I'm sick of hearing about all your college guys. Carlos, who are some of these high school names on this 101 to 200 group that are jumping out for you?
Yeah, in terms of standouts, I'm not sure if there's like an obvious one to point to. What I did notice when I was writing players in this range and just trying to get guys lined up, and even guys who couldn't get on the list, I feel like every high school pitcher I write up in this class is massively talented. Even going down to 200, Colton Brady, right-handed pitcher out of TNXL Academy. He's 6'5", 210 pounds, still has a lot of room to add weight and strength to his frame. He's one of the youngest players in the class. He's going to be 17 of the draft, 17.7 in particular. And he fits the sort of mold of players that I really like because the pitchability is present and obvious. He's got a four-pitch mix that he really locates well. It's not the most explosive stuff. There are players in this class who have louder, just pure stuff and impact breaking balls, but he's been up to 94. He's got both a slider and a curveball that have some swing and miss potential. And I really liked his changeup. He kills spin on this like mid-80s changeup and really feels like he can command it. kind of wherever he wants to. Another player that I really found myself liking in this range, I'm not sure how much you saw him, but Will Yao, who's a shortstop out of Virginia, committed to Virginia. He's this high-waisted, projectable frame, looks like a really good athlete, bursty runner, gets out of the box incredibly quickly. And then he's also hit well in a few different events. I think you're probably projecting a little bit more on the hitting ability, but it looks like he's definitely going to come into some power. He's got solid bat speed. Again, it's a frame that you can see adding a lot more strength. So he's a high school hitter I came away really liking. Let's see if there's anyone else who stands out. I'm curious if there are any names that you really like in this range.
Yeah, just the high school pitching is just loaded. I mean, like you said,
it's crazy.
Colton Brady at 200, all a bunch of guys who are back here where I'm like, man, I'd like this guy, you know, in the top few rounds normally, but then, all right, well, who are we going to push down? I don't know. but one guy I like a lot is Jake Carbaugh, who's a 6'6" right-handed pitcher from Florida. He's super young for the class. He's still 17. I think he turns 18 maybe like right before the draft, but comes at you from a really low slot, lower release, high, like almost sidearm sometimes, even though he is 6'6". Really fast arm, up to 95, 96 now. I think there's more in the tank still, with a ton of arm side run on his fastball. Great capacity for spinning his breaking ball. He's so tall and long. I think he's still like learning to sync everything up consistently, but like really good mover on the mound, really good fastball qualities, good feel for spinning a breaking ball. I think he's somebody that teams are going to gravitate toward greatly as the draft gets closer. Somebody like him or out of New Jersey, Sean Logie, who's, you know, another huge, like 6'6" pitcher. He's up to 94, left-handed pitcher. There's some cutting action to it. Throws his slider a lot. It's a really good slider. Yeah. Like the strikes, again, he's 6'6", teenage left-handed pitcher, like still figuring it out how to repeat his delivery consistently, throw more strikes. But like the upside there is very, I think, obvious to see. And then you got guys like, on the other hand of the other end of the physicality spectrum, somebody like Gannon Grant.
I was about to mention Grant as a pitcher to highlight, so I'm glad you flagged him.
Yeah, just, I don't think he's like a hidden gem by any means. You know, he's committed to Tennessee, decent program. Mm-hmm. But, in Indiana, high school pitcher who's, say like 6'1", 6'2", up to 95, but he can spin his breaking ball, pretty close to 3,000 RPM. It's a really good pitch for him. I think he's pretty athletic, feel for a changeup. So just a lot of good traits and a lot of good touch and feel from him.
Yeah, another Tennessee commit, not on the pitching side, although again, I feel like every pitcher we touch on, it's just crazy the amount of size and stuff you're getting from the arms in this class. But AJ Curry, an outfielder out of California, 18.3 at the draft, committed to Tennessee. Really interesting blend of contact, power, approach. The stroke is fluid and easy, quick hands. I feel like the power he shows in BP is encouraging. So as he grows into more physicality and just learns to tap into that power more in games, I feel like he could be a really well-rounded offensive player, probably a corner outfielder, it sounds like. I mean, he runs fine, but there are plenty of guys who run faster than him. But the more I dug into him, the more I really liked the swing and just the overall offensive approach he brought to the table. This class is super deep. This is the first time, I think this is probably the most excited I've been about this range of players since I've been covering the draft. And like the post-COVID draft class was kind of artificially inflated with depth players, but there are guys who did not crack this list who feels kind of crazy that they didn't. So
yeah, I was gonna say I could build a pretty strong, like if you gave me maybe an unlimited budget and 20 rounds to just like take my 20 favorite high school players.
See what the Brewers do.
Right? Who aren't on our top 200 draft list. I'd come away being like, dude, I love this team. Like, we got guys, you know, high school pitchers who are throwing 96, 97, who also have, you know, either throw strikes or have feel for a breaking ball, who are not just like one trick ponies,
right?
Who are not on this list. And we all, you know, we also have guys who do throw really hard who are lacking other things right now, but mm-hmm. who are not on the list. But it's really deep, especially at, you know, the college side better than I do, but like mm-hmm. I can make a really strong team of high school players who are not even on this list, at least not
well
yet.
You know what will be fun, hopefully next week me, you, and Jacob will have our annual player draft, so we'll get a chance to take a crack at some of these guys ourselves and draft them in our fake draft. So
is that what we're doing next week?
I'm hopeful to do it before the season starts, just so you can't say, oh, you saw player do X week one. So I would like to do that before the season. So if you can, I think we should.
That makes sense. I'll be here.
Okay. Any other players you want to hit on here, or should we wrap it up?
I mean, yes. Like, I'm just looking over the whole list.
There are a ton. I want to push people to the site to read the content too, Ben.
Yeah. No, it's... The high school class is really good. I'm just repeating myself now, though. So
that's great. Yeah. And again, college class is really good too. So it's just a really good class overall. So if you've got a lot of pool space, got a lot of extra picks, if you're the Cardinals, probably pretty happy right now. All right. Okay. Well, I'll just thank people for listening and encourage people to check out the site. It feels like we've been just running out of a ton of content over there. Again, you can see the full top 200 on the site. There's also a piece that goes with this, going through some of the notable movers. If you want to see that visually to just get a better perspective of who's moving up and who's moving down. We actually lost a pretty good talent in the class on this update. Andrew Costello, who enrolled early at Wake Forest, he had to be taken out. So I guess there's a little bit of the depth.
But we gained Caden McCarthy, so...
But we did gain Caden McCarthy, so I guess that is a one-for-one
trade. Thank you, Vermont.
Shout out, Vermont, my birth state.
Always coming to the rescue.
Yeah. So that's there. Updated farm system rankings. There's a lot of minor league content being rolled out on the site. We've got college content as we're getting ready to roll. And again, like next week, we're officially moving and running on the draft side, so things will actually be happening. Ben, anything you want to plug or mention before we get out of here?
No.
Okay, that's it for Ben. Man, a few words at the end of the show. I'm Carlos. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next time.